Making Good. I'm Renee Blanchard, founder and operator of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery, located here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Church Alley is a people-first, mission-driven small business that I opened in 2013. And the best part about owning a cafe is the people. So in this podcast, I interview the makers, the farmers, and the many interesting people I've met through the shops, the folks doing the good work here in Louisiana and all along the Gulf Coast. Let's get started.
Hey, I am Allison Gobert. I am a registered dietitian and instructor of dietetics at Nicholls State University. So basically, I teach people who want to be dietitians, and also I teach people who also want to be speech therapists and occupational therapists, physical therapists, PAs, you know, things like that. I've been doing that for, this is going on my sixth year. And before that, I worked as a clinical dietitian. I got some experience with general med surg, oncology, but also I worked with places like Eat Fit when I lived in Baton Rouge, and did a lot of hands-on things with chefs to help refine dishes to promote nutrition. And I say that carefully because I like to say that we're not always just like taking things away, but we're making things also more nutritious by adding fun and delicious things. So my experience is pretty diverse. Teaching now, I'm also working on my doctorate of clinical nutrition, currently at the point of my dissertation. And in the meantime of all of that, I have had two children. So there's a lot of things going on professionally, personally, but all developing as a person at the same time.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for coming. For being with us. You do a lot of things. And you're my professor. Yes. As I'm going through school. Yeah. Here. And that's kind of why I wanted to talk to you on the podcast, is like all the things that you're doing, but also just talk specifically about dietetics and diet and food, and like how we need to bring our own curiosity to our health.
Yeah.
And nutrition. Mm-hmm. So you talked a little bit, but how did you get into dietetics field? Like, yeah, you went to undergrad for dietetics degrees.
Yes. Right? And it's actually quite unusual for that to happen these days. A lot of people come to dietetics with previous education, or even they switch, you know, mid-undergrad because they find out about dietetics. So I'm kind of a special circumstance, and my husband and I were actually talking about this last night. The reason I went directly into dietetics was because I actually wanted to be a chef. Like, I grew up watching Rachel Ray and Emeril on like the OG Food Network, and I loved cooking. I vividly remember making chicken tetrazzini when my mom was at work with like just things that I found. Really? Like, why? I've never made that as an adult, but for some reason,
but watching a TV show or what? So looking up a recipe.
I was like, I just want to cook something. I guess I don't know why I chose that, but I did. But once I got, you know, into high school, I was taking an anatomy class, I was taking biology classes, and I really liked that. I liked the idea of like medicine and physiology, and to me, dietetics is kind of where those two interests met. And I would say that my career has kind of like proved that to be accurate.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And you teach a lot of our science heavy classes. So, and I was actually thinking about this today in class. I was like, oh shit, we are like the nexus of like medicine.
Yeah.
And like a restaurant or a chef or a line cook.
Absolutely.
You know, and trying to like, in a counselor or in a therapist.
Yes.
So like trying to like break all of those things down in a way that motivates someone,
right,
to feel like they are capable of making change.
There's so many hats. I mean, think about all of the variety of classes that you've taken. Mm-hmm. All of those things are important because those are ways in which one single dietitian can function, but then lots of dietitians can do all of these different, you know, niches.
Yeah.
So there are, you know, dietitians who are doing all of these things. Mm-hmm. They're helping people to prepare meals. They're helping them design meals based on, you know, conditions. they're providing nutrition counseling and education. They're doing all of these things at once, you know, so it's definitely.
Yeah. And you've done a bunch of things. That was something we first talked about when I started taking a class with you, is that you have done oncology. You're into sports, like, so yoga and spinning and all of those things. And then what other aspect, and then cooking.
I think, so one of my favorite areas to sort of practice in these days, or two, I should say, in like pediatric and early childhood nutrition, to include breastfeeding. And then this culinary medicine situation, which is actually a class that we've developed here at Nichols to teach medical students. And that is basically this conglomeration of cooking really tasty, delicious food, but also appreciating the nutritional benefits of it. So all of that to say, the science piece of it is always there. It's just the way that you're practicing it and, you know, making it visual.
And I also spoke to our department head, Mrs. Sloan, to so in this season, we'll also have that interview about hunger, but also about WIC.
And
so we have like, that was something I didn't understand before I came into school, is like how many industries it touches. So like you can be a sports medicine dietitian for like the Saints, who had the great one. And like, and then, WIC and breastfeeding and all of these different, oncology, diabetes, like in restaurants, what Eat Fit does.
Yeah. And it's like, whatever reason you are brought to dietetics, you can make that your niche, or even if it's something that becomes an interest to you later in life, you have this curiosity that you built and you want to take that journey, you can find a way to make your dietetics education fit that.
Yeah. Mold. Like me, like literally coming from restaurants, but also public health and environmental activism.
Exactly.
And finding
a
little place.
The world needs that. So you can find the things that you are, and Ms. Sloan hates the word passionate, but the things that really like fire you up, you can find a way to practice that.
Yeah. How I find your classes, like when I feel like you're tackling some of the more complex discussions in this degree that we're having. So it's really about like how, when we eat something, that piece of chicken is like moving along, and then what happens in the cell after. So how, and you are always trying to come up with new ways for us to learn these things. So do you have like, I guess, how do you like define curiosity, or how are you like trying to make us or students more curious about this work?
Right. I think what for me is the biggest challenge is to, like, we can't always visualize what's happening. So for me to be able to show you what's happening, or help you paint a picture of what is happening, I think is most important to me. And I say we can't always visualize it because we're talking about metabolism, this tiny little thing that's happening in every single cell in our body. It's hard to see that. And so how can we talk about it in a way, how can we like move, like even just like moving desks, I think is such a big thing to like wake people up. But how can we work together to really figure out these very intricate, delicate pathways, to make them actually come to life in a way. Because it can be so dry and, you know, boring, but I find it just so interesting because there's so many things affected by it, and there's so many things that it affects, metabolism. So I guess that's what I try to focus on, is figuring out how I can, one, make it something visual for y'all, but also interesting in the same way.
And we're also coming, like, I think it's interesting that food, we have to eat every day, right? That is kind of something that we have to do. We have to be alive to like have energy, to like have a happy life as well. And so we maybe take for granted what our food is doing, or like, you know.
Well, and I think like there's so much misinformation around nutrition, and you say like we have to eat. Well, there are people who would argue that you don't have to eat, right? And there's people who would argue that you don't have to eat this food group or this specific food, you know? And so I think that's kind of a part of it, is to appreciate things that food adds to our body and the things that it helps to do in our body, mm-hmm. the pathways that it is necessary for, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Rather than, you know, focusing on all these negative things, I guess.
Yeah.
I didn't know where I was starting with that.
Well, because we can, like, food, I feel like some of the discussion that's happening, like, so I'm trying to build a nutrition coaching business mm-hmm. now before mm-hmm. we, you know, with the tools that I have, with the business that I have, mm-hmm. the Church Alley and the customers that I already have. And so we have, but there's a lot of, you know, sometimes we think food is good or it's bad.
Yeah.
And so, like, we love to eat red beans and rice mm-hmm. and we can, if we look at it in a specific way, you can be like, well, that's a bad meal. We shouldn't be eating it. Mm-hmm. But when we're studying in a class, I'm like, that's a perfect meal.
Right.
Like, that is a great meal that we should be eating mm-hmm. regularly, mm-hmm. you know?
A lot of it is perception and, you know, like, what's good for me isn't necessarily good for somebody else.
Yeah.
But there's so many, like, for first of all, like, there's things that I've read before. It's like, food is not moral. Like, there's no good or bad. And I think that that's important to always remember. And we can think of, like, what is the benefits of this food? Like, what does this food offer to us? Is it a cheap and convenient mm-hmm. meal? That's something that it offers to us. Is it going to provide us the potassium that we talked about in class today?
Yeah.
That so many people are not getting enough of in our diet. Is it going to be a comfort meal? Is it going to feed a crowd? Like, there's so many things that food does other than just help us or hurt us, you know, like physically, I guess I should say.
When you have talked to your clients or in the past or patients in the past, what are some strategies that you talk to get people curious about their own diet or to help them?
Yeah. I think what I try to emphasize or get people to do is to, like, cook more and mm-hmm. like, actually play with food more. And that, to me, helps us get away from the good versus bad, mm-hmm. because then you're like, you're using exciting things and you're making it into something. I think that helps people. Because I think people just, like, get so far removed from where food comes from in the first place, mm-hmm. you know? So if we can actually get people playing with food and making food mm-hmm. and eating food together, I think that that helps them to understand ways in which they can enjoy food. And then eventually they can learn how that actually helps them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because sometimes we look at our plate or things that if we go grocery shopping, is, well, I shouldn't eat that, mm-hmm. so I'm not going to include it.
Right.
Or I don't, or like our attachments to how we grew up and mm-hmm. like in our childhood home mm-hmm. of, did we have to eat every single thing?
Yeah.
And we're still rebelling against that.
Absolutely. Like last night, I have an Instagram page, an account where I do things to teach people about, like, breastfeeding and pumping, which I'm exclusively pumping right now. But one of my favorite things to talk about is, like, how you feed babies and how you need babies. So I have a 8-month-old and I have a 2-year-old. And one of my favorite things to share is how what I eat, they can eat. Mm-hmm. So literally the same meal, I just modify it a little bit and I'll, like, snap a picture and people love to see that.
Yeah.
So I bring that up because last night I shared that my whole family had peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Right.
Because, I mean, sometimes
something
has to get it. Yeah, and they taste good. My toddler, the entire meal, was saying, I love peanut butter. Like, that's just what he was saying. And I looked at my husband and I'm like, he literally is happier now than any other gourmet meal that I can whip up. But I felt so many people would feel guilt around that. Mm-hmm. And that being their supper, they feel like, oh, that wasn't enough, or maybe I'm not giving them the things that they need. And at that point, I needed something very easy. My kids needed to be fed. My family needed to be fed. And what I am focusing on is that it was still an opportunity for our family to sit around a table and enjoy the same meal together and mm-hmm. talk about our day. So there's mm-hmm. so many things, that we can think about. And that's what I like to kind of, like, encourage.
Yeah, it was funny when I took the nutrition, like, life cycle class last year with you. I have a friend who had just had a baby, and so we had to do assignments where we turned in a meal plan for like a 2-month-old or 6-month-old. And I literally was like watching, I do not have children. I'm not around young children at all. So I was like, I don't know. Well, and even just reading it, it just didn't make sense to me. Yeah. So I just followed her because she posts there. Her family is Mexican. She's Mexican and her partner is Nigerian.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's like totally different types of food. And they live in DC, which is like, you can eat all kinds.
They have
of
so
food
much
there.
Available.
Yeah. So it was interesting to see food that we didn't even think of that a little baby would want to eat and like how she did it.
Yeah.
And it was really cool because, and I really enjoyed like, but it also gives you ideas for different life, not just as a baby, but like
all life stages. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so cool whenever you learn that, like, pretty much any, like, there doesn't have to be, like, a toddler food pyramid. Like, they can eat the same things. And I think that that's, like, almost treating them as an equal, you know, like, as an equal person, that they can eat the same things, like, they can handle the same things that we can, just in an appropriate, like, developmental form. It gives like so, there's so much like so social benefit to like everybody eating the same thing and sitting at a meal. And then, I mean, that's all exclusive of the benefits of eating, you know, a variety of foods, flavors, textures for development itself.
Right. Which gives us all like all the minerals and nutrients.
And this just like baseline for nutrition and health or proper development and growth throughout adulthood.
I wonder if that's also a generational thing too. I wonder if we're coming like as this new generation coming up of your kids are being brought back into a more, or I don't know back, but like a familiar situation where everyone has the ability or is empowered to like communicate their needs or their wants or like personality.
Yeah, for sure. I think I'm like the millennial generation.
Yeah.
So from what I see is we don't just...
You're in the younger millennial too.
Yes, I'm not... I'm like... So I was born in 92.
Yeah.
So I'm like kind of mid... I don't even know when millennials are at this point. I get called... Someone had the audacity to say that I was Gen Z.
Not that young.
But no, I think that our generation is very cognizant of like the things that we might have lacked in our upbringing, and not so much as like complaining about it. Not the word I'm looking for, but like I feel like we're the generation to act on it and say like, this wasn't meant for me, so how can I meet it for myself now and in turn do this for my family? And I think that food can be used in that way, and the approach to food, like how we view food, good or bad. Do we need to clean our plate? No. Like, how do we see food?
But such a part, like, just from, like, I came into having the cafe from an activist point of view. Also, I love waiting tables. Mm-hmm. Like, that is my favorite thing.
I can see you're like, you could talk to anybody.
Could talk to anyone. I ask people questions, and I'm like, what are you doing? What did y'all do earlier? What's happening? So, and I love service. I love serving people. Like, it's just really fun to me.
Yeah.
And so I'm coming to food from this place of like, of community of like, we are, our community is going to be safer.
And filling a gap.
Like, And then there's people coming that are like, well, I like to make this food. I like to make these types of food or whatever, or health perspective. You know, I also forgot where I was going with that. There was a millennial. Oh, so millennials. We're also like helping people of different generations.
Yeah.
And so as we help people who are aging, like the boomers are all aging now, and that's pretty much going to be the population that we work with. And chronic disease,
Definitely. It's
like they're not eating in the same way that your kids are eating.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, there's some, you could ask so many questions about that relationship there, but even like, how can we help them if that is their view of food?
Yeah.
You know, I've never really thought about it that way. That's really interesting.
Yeah,
like, we like I would love to explore that. Yeah.
And I think I'm Gen X. I'm at the very end. I'm very the last. I was born in 1980. So I'm like the very last.
Okay.
Of Gen X, and we were on our own. So like I really
is that the latchkey?
Latchkey kid. Like I made almost most of my own meals as a growing up, like from like 7 to today. You know, like so we didn't have family meals or any of that. Not often.
Yeah.
And like I just made like crap, you know, and it was great. But it was, I also just got to explore all different kinds of stuff.
Yeah. You know? So how do you feel? Do you feel like that is part of the reason why you are in this filling the gap, you know, situation?
I think it's a mix because I love going out to really nice meals.
Yeah.
Like that's a really important part of my life and relationships and stuff like that. But I am a lazy cook. And so I think part of what I'm bringing to the field or to my clients would be, I don't want to spend I'm not going to read a recipe and make food. Mm-hmm. I'm going to like buy the easiest ways to do things and then put it together and then go do all the other stuff I want to do in my life.
Yeah.
So it's like, how can I get the most nutrients out of the least amount of work that I'm doing?
Oh yeah. And there's like seasons of life too, in which like, we do need to be like that lazy quote unquote cook. And then I go through that in a week. Like some days I'm like, I'm making peanut butter and jelly. And the next day I'm like, you know, mincing a mirepoix because that's how I, you know, let out any like anxiety or frustration. Like I just like to chop things. It's something I enjoy. So it's, you know, it's a spectrum that I find myself on anyways.
Yeah. And so what was your family like with food? Did y'all have dinners? Like family dinners?
So I don't know how my mother like did everything that she did looking back. She worked full time. I was one of six and four of us always lived in the house. Mm-hmm. So on top of that, we did all of these like extracurricular activities. Like there was probably not a night that we were all home like immediately after school. So we were always very busy, but we always ate a meal and we ate together. I think that is like the most important thing. But my mom was not like, you know, from scratch everything, but we still had a meal that we ate together as a family. And to me, that is just like such a huge important thing in my life. But I mean, she cooked a variety of things. Some was from scratch, some was convenience foods that she would prepare. But I would say pretty well balanced, I guess. But like whenever you have six kids, you can't eat out all the time or you know, go to fast food and stuff. So she made that work somehow.
And that's what you prioritize too.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess like somehow that probably influenced the fact that I wanted to cook just because I saw my mom cooking all the time. But it's funny because we don't have like these huge traditions around food in my family like you see some people have. But it was just a nightly, you know, mundane, we always ate together. So
how do you sustain? So you have done a bunch of different stuff and you're now doing, so you're getting your PhD in breastfeeding, right? Studying.
So school. my degree is going to be a doctorate of clinical nutrition. So it's a DCN, and my dissertation is focused on not exactly breastfeeding people, but the way in which dietitians care for breastfeeding people. So what the actual data that is in my dissertation is the documentation by the dietitians, not the actual people who are breastfeeding or the babies who are breastfeeding. So I started that in 2019. I think you were going to ask like, how do I sustain?
That curiosity too, because you're already teaching, you're already in school every day teaching classes. And then you're getting, and that is not a requirement to keep your RD status or anything like that.
So
either.
I was hired here to teach, and of course, it's encouraged for us to continue our education. Mm-hmm. And if we want to be promoted past the instructor level mm-hmm. or assistant professor level, then we it's very encouraged for us to get a terminal degree. However, I would say even before I got this job, it was something that I was always interested in. I guess I don't mind school. I wouldn't say I love school, but I don't mind it. I think I just really love to learn, and it's something that is just inherently in me mm-hmm. to enjoy that. I will say one of the things that I like about teaching is that there's always like a start and an end, and then you start over. Mm-hmm. You start again. So I have the opportunity to revisit these topics and really refine my understanding and my skills in those areas, mm-hmm. which I really enjoy. And things are always changing, so I can stay up to date yeah. with things. So it's kind of the same when you go back to school, you start a class and you end a class, and then you move on to a new topic, you know? Yeah. So I think that is good for me and my personality, I guess. But it's definitely difficult to, you know, keep that momentum going yeah. all the time, particularly. So I've taken 2 maternity leaves.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to get back started after that.
Yeah. Well, in like a year and a half.
So. Yeah. So they're 19 months apart. My husband and I laugh all the time because we had, you know, decided in 2019, we got married in June of 19. I started my doctorate in the following August, and we agreed that we were going to wait to have kids until at this point I would get pregnant
with yeah.
my first, so that by the time I was done with my dissertation, I would, you know, have a baby.
Yeah. By the time you do your dissertation, you'll have 2 kids.
So now, like, honestly, I could just like kind of cry thinking about like the fact that I'm gonna have 2 children walking at my graduation.
Oh yeah.
Like, so that is kind of what is like keeping me going at this point.
Yeah.
Because I just can't wait for life to kind of move on
yeah.
from this constant stress. It's not even that it's like constant stress, but it's like always something that I have yeah. to be. There's very minimal downtime. So that's how I'm kind of getting through it.
Yeah.
I'm just looking ahead at this point.
Yeah.
However, I'm just like interested in what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And, like, you pick a dissertation topic that's going to be enjoyable for you to work on. Mm-hmm. Literally, it's your life for mm-hmm. however long it is. So yeah, you know, it's there's difficulties in it, but I like it at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And I will say, like, this has, especially over my most recent maternity leave, that period of rest for me was very enlightening because it showed me how much I was demanding of myself.
Mm.
And so I have been doing some work and on my own little journey of how do I take care of myself, because at this point, my dissertation is not going anywhere. Like, I'm going to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't take that stress away. I can't take that load away. I could if I wanted to, but I'm not choosing not to.
Yeah.
So how do I support myself? Mm-hmm. And how do I nourish my body? How do I, you know, help my mental health? What am I doing to help myself get through this mm-hmm. and see the end and not lose my mind at the same time? So that's my own, like, kind of interest at this point. Doing things, which is why I bought
to track new data.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that it's just in me to always be like, okay, what can I do to improve? What can I do better, help people more, that kind of.
So what would you say, because I feel like, especially after the pandemic, we all feel overwhelmed.
Yeah.
There is a feeling of overwhelmness mm-hmm. in everyone. Our lives feel really busy
mm-hmm.
in a different way than it did, I think, before the pandemic.
Yeah.
That busyness feels something mm-hmm. like something else. So what would you suggest of someone who is looking at their diet, who feels like crap, who doesn't feel like they can add new things or take away new things? They're just on this like mm-hmm. path board to start looking at their nutrition or what they're eating a little differently or mm-hmm. start to improve it in ways.
Maybe what I would hope that they could do is start to just build some interest in what they're eating and how they view food. If our food is boring, mm-hmm. and not just like the actual food, but like if we are bored by it, then it's not exciting and it's not something that's going to really help us feel good. So like, if we think about it, the way that we digest our food affects how we metabolize it. And then that affects how we feel after we eat it. Right. Mm-hmm. So if we're not like being excited by the food that we look at, right. And if we aren't sitting down and enjoying food with people, or being mindful of the food that we eat, then it's not doing a whole lot for us, you know? I think you have to figure out how you can make it approachable for you to include like really nourishing foods. If you're not somebody who doesn't ever cook, like how can you make cooking how can you get an entry point for yourself? Mm-hmm. I guess that would be kind of my place to start, and then trying to shift our mindset from looking at food as something that needs to be like tamed, mm-hmm. and instead looking at food as something that can be like added to or like mm-hmm. celebrated, and like what can we do to add to this meal to help us feel good or give us what our body needs, whatever nutrient that we need more of.
Yeah.
That I think so many people can benefit from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just whether it's like,
did I even answer the question?
Yeah.
It's the end of the day.
It's like, whether it's like chopping because we're frustrated uh-huh. by the day, and so the chopping helps us do that, or like
yeah.
fresh, the smell of fresh herbs, like yeah. makes us feel really good.
It's like, yeah. I love that. Like cooking cilantro, like not even cooking, yeah. but messing with cilantro, like yeah. garlic, like, it wakes you up. I think.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and then just like color, like adding color. I mean, you always hear like eat the rainbow or whatever. Like there's actual reasons that we should do that, but yeah. it makes it more exciting. Or we eat with our eyes first.
Mm-hmm.
The whole process of digestion happens or starts whenever we look at food, when mm-hmm. we smell food. So our food needs to be exciting for us to actually enjoy it and really get the benefits of it.
Then otherwise we're just like, I mean, we live in a place where there's so much good food, like the mm-hmm. tasty food mm-hmm. all around us, mm-hmm. like our family members make amazing dinners yeah. and foods and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so like, it's easy to depend on maybe an recipes that add that are not, maybe we could modify it slightly
yeah.
to be more nutritious for yeah. our needs.
Mm-hmm. Cause like, I am of the camp that like something should not be messed with. Like if yeah. there are like very, our, you know, cultural foods, if they are the foods that our family culture has always included, then like, don't mess with that. Like mm-hmm. you use that, you reserve that for your special times and you yeah. enjoy it. You don't feel any guilt about it, but like, what can you do on, you know, every other day? What can you do to add to your meals? What can you do to add to your day? I think like a lot of times people focus on taking or like trying to cut carbs or cut mm-hmm. fat, not cook with rice or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, why don't we start by, are you eating a snack? If you're not having a snack between breakfast and lunch, how about we add a vegetable with a dip that you like?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Instead of how can I like take things away from what I'm doing? Like instead, let's just add something very easy for you to snack on, and then yay, we're getting another serving of vegetables. Yay, we're getting fiber, whatever nutrients that's providing, and you're going to feel better
yeah.
and not deprived.
Right.
Because that's not sustainable.
No. No. You just feel like
yeah.
crap.
Yeah. And you're like, you just want what you're missing.
Yeah.
You know?
And then eat maybe like in the evening, we're eating a ton of things that we don't even want.
You won't feel the need to do that if you're like eating food you enjoy, if you're filling your body with what it needs. You're going to see that you have less of those desires and munchies and, you know, mindless eating later on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't have to be the goal, but you might see that.
Yeah. And part of having curiosity about your diet is like looking, maybe like saying, I've never tried this vegetable. I'm going to try this week. Uh-huh. I'm going to try this one new vegetable this week and see what happens and try another protein next week.
That's actually like what's exciting or like what makes feeding kids so exciting, feeding infants, is because like you want them to be exposed to lots of different things, you know, frequently. Mm-hmm. And so I try to say like, okay, she hasn't had zucchini ever or in a while. So I'm going to just find a way to cook zucchini this week. And, you know, it's a little bit different for me. It's something I don't cook, you know, all the time. So yeah, like just getting excited about particular foods that you can include, or herbs and spices, like things like that, for sure.
Yeah. And when we try, but then we're also getting new minerals or new nutrients.
Yeah. I mean, then that opens this whole conversation about the gut and the bacteria that inhabit our gut, because we want a wide variety, because then that's going to be a wider variety for the bacteria that live in our gut to eat off of and thrive on. So yeah, you definitely want
which that. Which we want.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. You want that.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like the most of what I wanted to talk about, is just, I guess another question I would have is, what after you get your PhD and you're here, do you have like other things that you want to explore, like other types of profession, or maybe not professions, but like perspectives?
Yeah. So I definitely want to, you know, continue with research, and I hope that I have the time. I mean, I'm going to find time to do it, but as far as like with my work, I hope that I can find time to focus on some research and hopefully get more students involved. And see, I guess like my biggest area of interest at this point is breastfeeding, breast milk, and infant feeding. We talked about it in class the other day about how breast milk flavor can change based on what you're eating. Like, that is such an exciting idea to me. I don't know how I would go about that, but I would love to get into some more like technical research in areas that interest me, to continue like to, you know, nurture that curiosity.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, like I said, I teach, even though I'm teaching usually the same classes, this class that this year or this semester, the class that I'm teaching you is new for me, but I always am, you know, covering these topics again, but with the newest information and learning more about the topic so that I can teach y'all like what is the most current. So definitely will continue to do that, but I foresee my interest in breastfeeding to continue. And hopefully, like, I really just want to make an impact as, like, far as how dietitians can support breastfeeding people, because there's really not a lot of research in that. And I think that, or I know that there can just be so much more support from all healthcare professions for people who have had babies, whether or not they choose to breastfeed. So that's definitely an area that I want to contribute to.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted us to talk about, you mentioned briefly that that Nichols does a culinary medicine program. So it's a 2-week program with LSU for third year medical students to come here. And like Nichols is awesome in a way that we have this amazing culinary school too. Can you just talk about like what the mission of that program, that collaboration is?
Yes. So Renee is being humble here. And so last year, Renee and I, we actually worked on a little research project, which was a continuation of a research project that they've already done with the culinary medicine program at Nichols. But basically in Renee's work, we found that there's not enough nutrition education provided to people who are becoming medical doctors. So medical schools, they have this requirement or standards that they're supposed to meet. But what we're seeing is oftentimes those standards for nutrition education in their curriculum isn't being met. But on top of that, our students are telling us that they want more. Mm-hmm. They're telling us that they want to know more about nutrition so that they can have these conversations with their patients. Mm-hmm. So our goal is to give them a little bit more exposure with nutrition, but to also help them to develop some foundational skills in cooking so that whenever they do have those conversations, mm-hmm. they actually know, you know, what they're talking about.
And can provide like firsthand. Well, it's like I used avocado oil and it did this and I liked it.
So what are some of those really small things that they can suggest to their clients or patients when in hopefully in the meantime, they're also sending that person to a dietitian who is, you know, very well qualified to provide that nutrition education and counseling. So we're not asking them to take the place of a dietitian. We want to nurture that relationship between dietitians and doctors, but help them to be prepared for those initial conversations to help people live a healthier lifestyle, improve their eating patterns, and that sort of thing. So they come to Nichols. They stay with us for 2 weeks. I have a lecture with them in the morning on a specific topic, and then we go into the lab with our chef. And we cook recipes that go along with that topic. And then we have what the culinary school lovingly calls family meal. Mm-hmm. And we eat together and we talk about the benefits of those foods. Mm. And it's a perfect example. Like somebody might walk up to us and we're eating a dish and they're like, well, that doesn't seem that healthy to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no. We're talking about all the benefits of this food. Because we want to keep it, you know, consistent with what their patients are going to be eating. Mm-hmm. So how can we add to this dish? Like, what is something we can add to improve the nutrition of it? So that's pretty much the goal.
Yeah. And that, you know, we know we're both from here, from Louisiana. Like, we have health problems mm-hmm. outside from other parts right. of this country.
Right.
You know, we're mm-hmm. just seeing health problems at greater amounts.
Exactly.
And we know people, you know, in our family who have diabetes and heart mm-hmm. attacks and strokes and cancer and all these things. And then we go to the doctor and we don't get, there's just huge gap of like, we're trying yes. to solve a very serious problem, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that mm-hmm. is a priority, mm-hmm. but like, what are the things that we can do?
Exactly.
And they can't always help us.
Right. And like, I can't tell you how many times I've received messages on like Facebook or text messages. I actually literally just got one that somebody said, my LDL cholesterol is high. Like, what do I do?
Yeah.
So there's people who are getting this data or they're being told to lose weight and they're at a complete loss for how to approach right. it. So hopefully we can cut that out or like improve that a little bit.
And some of the research that we found is that, it's only 19 hours required nutrition mm-hmm. education for any doc, for any medical mm-hmm. student. And that's rarely being met.
Right.
And then some of it is just voluntary yes. as well. Yeah. Like they don't have to. And that's what mm-hmm. this program is, a voluntary for these medical
yes.
students.
Yeah. So they choose to come to this course as a part of, it's explained to me every year.
It's an elective. They get and they can pick all the elective. Yes.
And it's in their third year. So it's before they, it's before they choose like residency and before they pick a specialty. So, they get to have the opportunity to do that. So we want them all to come.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's really awesome.
They love it. By the second day, they're all like, wow, this is immensely better than waking up at 4:30 for
totally. Well, I think those are all my questions. But thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
Well, that's all for today. Thanks so much for listening to Making Good. You can find our podcast on all the platforms you find your favorite podcasts. You can also find a transcript of this episode and all of our episodes on our website, churchalley.store. If you loved this episode, please share it and let others know about the good work of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery. Thanks again for listening to Making Good. I hope you have a really good day. We'll see you next time.